And now it's time for your financial destination with Roger Hamilton, with strategies to enhance or improve your retirement income.
Hello, I'm Roger Hamilton, and welcome to the Financial Destination Show. So over the next 20 minutes, we'll go over some ways, some ideas, some strategies to help you improve your investments and to enhance your retirement income. And one of the keys in sound financial planning is estate planning, protecting your wealth, no matter what the size of your investments. And with us today, a repeat guest to talk about estate planning, protecting your financial wishes, is Blair McKinnon, Heritage Law, Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. Good morning, Blair.
Good morning. How are you?
Not too bad. I was just talking earlier. It's been almost 2 years since you've been on the show.
I'm happy about it to be back, Roger.
Well, we're glad to have you back. I mean, we've had a COVID crunch, and it's been almost 2 years.
I know. Yes.
How did COVID affect your business the last 2 years?
Interesting enough, we thought we were going to have a slowdown, and it just went crazy. We were absolutely, we had to turn business away. It was that crazy.
Wow. So people come in, still come in, or they did more of a Zoom or calls?
No, a lot of Zoom over the phone, but then we had people come into the basement to sign, and we signed them up in the parking lot or
be safe.
Any innovative ways that we could get the job done.
Well, the same with I did, like the last 2 years, just being on the radio and being available in an office, there's only one of me. You know, we still could meet. You had to be careful, but do things right, but not in a crowd, but busy. Yeah. Has law practice changed much in the last 10 years from what it used to be, or much the same?
Yes, it has. Well, it's a lot more technical now, Roger, and, you know, with property, for example, migrations, and it's just, it's a whole different world. You can't dabble in these areas anymore. You really need to specialize these days. You can't just do a whole lot of everything anymore.
That's why you have different branches and different people specialize
in that
category. So we'll talk about wills and estates today.
Yes.
So the who and the what and the when, we've sort of talked about it before, but we'll set it up. So real simple. We'll start off with this one. What is a will and the need to have one?
The will is the document that will speak for you when you're passing, which will help you dictate where you want your estate to go and who you want to have it. And everybody should have a will. I think, for example, a couple unmarried with children, of all of the people who have a will, they really need to have a will, because if one of them passes away, their estate will go to their infant children and not to them, which is it's a real nightmare. So it's really important to know what you want to do and to appoint competent people to do it for you.
So I guess that being said, who should require a will? Is it an age amount or a dollar amount that you should?
No.
Bob, it's time to come in. We have to talk about this.
No, there's no age amount other than being an adult over 19. And the size of your estate really doesn't have an impact. What really has an impact is who do you want to look after things for you when you're passing, and where do you want it to go?
Because it can be, I guess, you know, lack of better words, a bit of a mess when you're not around to defend your thoughts.
We often call it a dog's breakfast. Yes,
it can be
an absolute nightmare. Yes,
yes,
and expensive.
So I guess the question is, what happens if you don't have one? It's kind of obvious, but I just let it slip by. I was going to do it. I was a single person. What do I care?
Yeah. Well, to come back to my example, for example, if you had an infant child and you're living common law, and you pass away, the public trustee is going to have to get involved in looking after your estate. You cannot, your designated person cannot, or if you don't have children, it will go to your parents. So if your other significant half doesn't like your parents, that's a real problem as well.
Fights begin. And this can be expensive and drawn out, I guess,
who can finally win.
Yes. Are wills different across the country? And meaning, if I live in Newfoundland, I moved to Alberta, it's still binding in the country?
Yes, it is. If you did a will in Newfoundland, you moved to Alberta, your will in Newfoundland will still serve you well in Alberta.
Is Quebec different?
Yes, it is. Quebec is a bit different. You can still use the wills from Quebec here, but as I understand it, I think wills get filed almost immediately in Quebec, but you can still access those wills. And a Quebec will is still valid in Nova Scotia.
Is a Nova Scotia will valid in Quebec?
Yes, it is.
Okay,
yes,
so if we move or transfer, I'm still okay.
Although I would say in Quebec, if I moved to Quebec, I would want to contact a notary and just
make sure
that everything is okay. Yes.
What about new immigrants, people coming from the States or the Middle East or the Far East? I have a will back in my homeland. I've now come to Canada. Is that binding in Canada?
Yes, it is, but there are a lot of challenges with those, because in terms of the format and the terms of who signed it and how they signed it, whether or not it would meet the requirements of our act in Nova Scotia or in Canada. I would encourage someone moving, for example, from India, I would encourage them to probably look at upgrading their will.
Yes. So it could be outdated or not, or whatever it might
be. Yes.
Okay. So somebody wants to meet you and talk to you about, I want to set up my will. What should they bring with them on the first meeting, and what do you want to know from them? Blair, let's sit down. Let's talk about doing my will. What are the questions, and what should I bring to start off?
The first thing we want to know is what kind of assets do you have and what form are they in? For example, with a husband and wife, we want to ensure that everything is joined so that if one of them passes away, it goes to the survivor without having to pay Blair McKinnon and probate fees, that it will go automatically. A house, for example, Roger, is a classic example. The house should be in both of their names, and sometimes it's not, and that creates a real, it's solvable, but it's expensive.
I've seen it different times where someone has a bank account in their name and they no one planned on dying, but we eventually do.
Yes.
And money is tied up in the wife or the spouse cannot get access to that account for months of really what was their own money, but her name wasn't on it, so she takes quite a while to get at it.
Sure. Well, sometimes a good bank that knows you well, they will, if you bring the bills in, they will pay them for you until the estate gets open, but you really can't access it yourself, so it's important to have them joined.
What is a power of attorney, and what is that, and how is it applied? What does that mean, power of attorney?
A power of attorney applies while you're alive. For example, while you're alive, your power of attorney is in effect. When you pass, your power of attorney dies and your will takes effect. The power of attorney is the document that can speak for you. For example, if you were traveling a lot, Roger, you could have your wife named as your power of attorney. But even more importantly, if you became legally incapacitated, then that person can sign for you as well.
And I would set this up with a trusted person who
very trusted
can sign for me because maybe I'm starting to physically or mentally be of my 100%.
Yes, that's right.
And that's usually a family member, or can it be anybody?
It can be anybody. Usually it's a family member, but it can be anybody. It needs to be somebody that you really trust. Yes.
And I should probably discuss that with the other family members that number one is going to be in charge and numbers two and three have to wait.
Well, sometimes it's a good idea. Sometimes it's not, because you don't want to offend people and it may never come to fruition. So sometimes people would rather, they need to, the person that you name needs to know, but the others may need not to know.
Not need to know basis. Okay. How do people contact your office? We're going to be back in the second half, some good questions, I think. But how do people contact your office? So Blair, that's some nice general questions. I have my own questions for me. How do I contact your office?
Well, you just call our number at 465-6669, and we do it. And Roger, just before we leave this section, at one time a power of attorney would deal with financial and medical. And now the power of attorney deals with financial only, and people really need to think about doing a healthcare directive so that if they're incapacitated in hospital, there's somebody who can speak to their family physician or their doctor.
So two different titles now. Power of attorney is just really financial.
Yes, and the healthcare directive is purely medical, and they are now separate documents.
And two different people?
No, it could be the same people.
Okay.
Yes.
So they have to, but if they were two different people, they should communicate a little.
Oh, yes.
Know who each other
are. That's right, yes.
Good point. Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, what I'll describe as some Roger what-if questions. See if my little creative mind comes up with some little serious fun questions for Blair right after this break.
On the Financial Destination Show, we want you to become more educated, knowledgeable, and comfortable with your investments. Check your results over the past 5 years. Do you feel they should have done better? What would you change to improve performance over the next 5 years? Tune in every Thursday morning at 9:15 to hear more on how to improve your retirement income.
And we're back with Blair McKinnon, Heritage Law on Ochterlony Street in Dartmouth. Okay, so the second half, we're going to have some Roger what-if scenarios, some serious but informative fun. So I'm going to set up maybe four different situations, and Blair, you'll tell me if that's legally right. What would take place? What would happen if? All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay,
yes.
Our first scenario set up. A guy gets a divorce. It happens. He has a little bit of money left over. She took most of it. He has a little bit left over. 5 years later, he's doing really well financially. He remarries, but he dies a year or two after that second marriage. Everyone at the funeral sad. He's sad, he's dead. His new wife is sad, his friends are sad, his former kids are all sad. But the ex-wife pulls up in a new convertible, all happy, and giggles, skips to the head of the line. Why are you so happy? It's, you know, show some respect. She said, well, because I'm still on his old will, and he never changed it, and I'm here to get the rest of his money. True? Or does the divorce trump out or cancel out the old will? He never get a new one? She's still on the old one. What happens in that case?
The old will still prevails. So if he was married and got divorced and he never changed his will, then the divorce does not nullify that will.
So point get your will updated and changed for a reason. So she would have, so the new wife would be left out, so what he left behind goes to the ex.
Well, see, what I would be advising the new wife in that situation is to make an application under the Testator's Family Maintenance Act that he had an obligation to provide for her. And the same with his children. If his children were left out as well, they could also apply under the Testator's Family Maintenance Act.
But the divorce itself does not cancel out the old will. If he forgot to redo it, the ex-wife has a real good claim on some money.
The divorce does not cancel out the will, no.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was actually true.
Yeah. We'll talk about it later, but marriage is void, all wills.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, good to know. Hey, Riley, get your eyes rolling in your head. So good to know. Okay, number two then. All right, number two. Guy gets a divorce. I'm on this kick again. Guy gets a divorce. He remarries, and he got rid of the old will this time. I get rid of the old will. But I never got around to doing a new one. Again, he dies. 5 months after getting remarried. No new will. Who's in line to get his money in the eyes of the law? His new wife or his former original kids? Who's considered next of kin? The new wife or the old kids?
Both. Both are next of kin. But the new wife would be entitled to the first $50,000 off the estate and a portion thereafter. And the kids would be entitled to a portion as well. His biological children.
Okay.
So in that circumstance... And I would assume that the divorce would take care of all of the financial issues that they had dealt with his former wife. So she would not have a claim. Unless she was owed money under the divorce, then she could make a claim against the estate for any money she was owed under the old divorce decree. But in terms of an entitlement under the Intestate Succession Act, the former wife would not be an heir, what we would call an heir at law.
So if he was still paying child support or maintenance payments to the ex-wife, even though he died, he'd still have to pay those.
Oh, yes, he would. Yes.
Death doesn't do that.
That would not. Well, and again, it depends upon the nature of how the court order was worded insofar as maintenance, whether it would die with him or whether it would continue. And that's something that would need to be addressed by the divorce attorneys at the time.
And that would have been done, probably. A good lawyer would have taken care of that during the divorce?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it wouldn't pop up.
It's really a contractual relationship, and that contract is binding on the estate, depending upon what the terms of that contract say.
And though we didn't do a new will, automatically, though, but as you just said, so the new wife's entitled to the first $50,000.
And a percentage thereafter, depending upon the number of children.
And if there's two kids in her, they get a third each after that?
It would depend upon the number of children.
Okay.
But there's also, with the matrimonial home, she would have first entitlement to the home if they lived in it together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, mind you, and if anything was joint, Roger, it would go to the new wife. So, for example, if they had a house together, she would inherit that house outside of the estate as well.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Good to know. Get a lawyer, get it updated, get a will.
Yes.
Okay. Third scenario. Woman gets divorced again. We're all doing divorces today. But she got divorced at a young age. She raises her two kids on her own. Not going to remarry again, she says. Men, had enough of them. One is enough. And I'm going to learn how to fix things myself around the house. Who needs a guy? Okay. Later on in life, she meets a guy. Smooth guy. Larry the Lover. He can dance. He can sing. He can cook. She lets her guard down. He moves in. He sells his little house. He pockets the money. Now he shares her house. He's moved in. She dies within the first year of them living together, common law. Maybe something she ate. He was a cook. There's no will. Common law Larry. He came away with selling his own house. Does he get the new one? Or can her two kids, Buffy and Jody, in their early 30s now, file a protest and say, Larry, the lonesome loser, get lost. See you later, Larry. Who gets the house?
The kids get the house.
The kids get the house.
Yes, they do, because the Intestate Succession Act does not recognize common law relationships. So the kids would get the house. What I always tell people, Roger, in those scenarios, and that's an excellent scenario that you raise, I always tell people before they put their toothbrush in your medicine cabinet, make sure you get a cohabitation agreement and make sure you sign them up so they cannot make a claim. Because people do crazy things today that he'll say, well, she promised me that if I took the garbage out every Tuesday that I would get half the house. I mean, it gets really stupid. And so it's important to solidify the relationship in a marriage contract or a common law contract to define what each one is entitled to. But in that scenario, if there's nothing in place at law, he has no entitlement under the Intestate Succession Act.
And there's no time frame? Hey, I've been here for 10 years, it's part mine now?
Well, sometimes the courts will come up with what they call a resulting trust. And really briefly, he was a rancher in Saskatchewan. She worked the ranch. He went to the rodeos. He died, and everything was in his name. The homestead laws left everything to not to her because they weren't married. And the Supreme Court of Canada said it was a resulting trust, that it was really meant for both of them. So the courts will look at the scenario and decide whether or not it was really a trust arrangement between them. The challenge with that is that it's going to involve court and expense and it's time and money. Time and money, yes.
Which all could have been avoided had they signed something with their lawyer at the start.
Yes.
Here's the plan.
Yeah. I mean, lawyers hate black and white. We like gray.
You got to win. Okay. But you're right. I mean, and that takes, maybe the fun of the romance, but it's the practical side. If this happens.
No question.
Because that's what can happen.
Yes. And I tell people that many times.
All right.
Some listen, some don't.
That's right. Do we have time, Riley, for one more? Okay, one more. Here's our fourth one. Mom, Elizabeth, getting up there in age. She's now 90 plus, has lots of money, not much time left. She has two kids, Charles and Andrew, both living out west. Haven't seen Mom in 20 years. Mom's starting to lose her marbles, we'll say. She meets a new boyfriend at the retirement home. He's only 80, younger man, Dash Riprock. Got all of his teeth, got nice hair. He looks like a young Bob Barker. And to him, the price is right because Elizabeth has lots of money. So, Charles and Andrew. Uh-oh, there goes the inheritance. Dash Riprock is making moves in our mother. What steps can Charles and Andrew make to ensure their cut is protected and cut Dash out of any financial picture with Mom?
That raises a whole myriad of issues. And Roger, you have no idea how common that is today in what you raise. Hopefully the kids will listen to the mother.
I thought I made up something original.
No, you didn't. No. But it's good. I like it. In that case, and again, there should be a cohabitation agreement, and there should be, it's hard for the kids to ensure that the mother doesn't change her will.
Yes.
But then it creates a whole other set of issues, whether or not she was competent, whether or not there was undue influence, and of all of the situations, that really is the most difficult, because who knows what influence there was, who knows whether or not she was in the right mind, but people can do all of the wrong things for the wrong reasons. The most common example, though, Roger, is that the guy is 90, he meets the 20-year-old blonde, and he's in love, and leaves everything to her. Then that becomes a real issue. But if he's competent and he does what he wants to do,
and
he's doing it for all the wrong reasons, he could give all the money to her, and if he's competent, nobody can stop him.
That's it.
Yeah.
Wow. Something to look forward to.
Yes, so be careful.
be careful with your
don't
folks.
Don't get stupid on me, Roger.
Be careful. Being boring is actually pretty cool. I like it.
Yes.
So the kids can do...
The kids could argue undue influence, a lot of things. Yep. But at law, unless they got married, again, he wouldn't have any claim to her estate.
Right.
But if they did get married, that puts him in line for being her executor.
So watch that. No Elvis honeymoon for two sets of 90-year-olds.
No, not a good idea.
Not a good idea anytime. Okay. How much time do we have left, Riley?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Okay. We'll sort of wrap it up. But that being said, so I guess in that case, could the kids come see you as their lawyer, say, listen, Blair, I'm worried about Mom signing off something. She just can't sign a will by herself. She needs to go through a legal process to do that?
No, she could sign a will by herself. And she could have two people witness the will. She could go online and print off a will kit and sign it and have somebody sign it for her. But that creates a lot of issues in terms of was she properly advised? Was she competent? Did she understand her rights?
Which could be dragged on in court for a while.
It would be easier for the kids to contest a will that was signed without a lawyer than it would be to contest a will that was signed with a lawyer, because lawyers are trained to look for signs of competency, undue influence, all of those things.
Right. Great, great, great stuff. So I was taking notes, and I think I got it. So the three most important things: see a lawyer, have a will, keep it updated.
Yes.
Do that, you should be fine.
Yes. And make sure you don't marry some loser.
Try that too. I've said that. Yeah. And become one yourself. That's right. So thank you, Blair, for coming in today. Heritage Law Office. Again, how can people contact you at your office?
Yeah. Well, 465-6669 or blairm@heritagelaw.ca.
Got it. Okay. Folks, we thank you you for listening in this morning. We hope you've learned something you can use to protect your wealth, to enhance your retirement income. This show will be on my website in a few weeks. You can visit yourfinancialdestination.ca. You can call 902-499-4000. 5879. Any topics you want to hear in the show, call in or email me and we'll put those on for you. Once again, this is Roger Hamilton. Until next time, stay safe and stay invested.